Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. Great to be here with you this afternoon. An absolutely just beautiful day. I mean, we're talking like upper 70s. The sun is just out in full force. And absolutely nothing controversial or divisive or anything has happened in the last 24 hours.
No, nothing.
It's great.
It's just been it's been fantastic.
I know. Nothing at all crazy going on anywhere. It's great. Great day to be a...
I'm so scared.
As well you should be. And I mean, who can blame you? I mean, in our business, doing what we do, pretty much every show or really even anything cable, like anything news related or current events related at all is either going to be... Either the whole show is going to be like, today is a great day for America, or today is the end of the Republic as we know it.
Yeah.
And there's pretty much no in-between anywhere. And no. Of course, if you listen to this show for more than 5 minutes, you kind of could probably guess on which side of that scale we might lean towards. But, like, we're not going to be throwing a party or mourning the country.
No.
By any means.
No, I mean, anybody who's listened to the show for more than 5 minutes, no, we kind of skirt a lot of those, even though you and I pretty much agree politically. We know a lot of our listeners don't, and so we don't want to have that discussion. There's things that we just avoid.
And as we kind of describe ourselves as a dive bar on the radio, we kind of apply by the same rules as dive bars traditionally do, which usually means we don't talk politics.
And if you spit on the floor, clean it up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we're not above making jokes about things, so that said, so much for when you're famous, they let you get away with anything, eh?
Well, he hasn't been sentenced yet.
Well, not till July, apparently.
And anybody says he's going to jail, you're wrong. Donald Trump is not going to jail.
There's no way he actually goes to jail. Like, you're talking about a first-time criminal offender. Like, they're going to sentence him at best to, like, probation, maybe house arrest, something like that.
Yep.
But, of course, you're already hearing from back from the other side, well, now you've done this. Well, we're going to go after Biden. We're going to go after Clinton. And I'm like, you know what?
Go ahead.
Please, do. For one, maybe get all these old geezers out of there that are completely out of touch with everybody else.
Thank you.
And it would really kind of do us all a favor. And really, it wouldn't matter anyway, because, I mean, you're not going to put Biden in jail. He barely knows where he is half the time. Clinton, I mean, he's living in a house with Hillary. Isn't that punishment enough?
Or are they talking about Hillary Clinton?
No, well, both.
Yeah.
Why not both?
Yeah, that's house arrest. Yeah.
Really, the torture is making them live with each other. It's fine. It's trust me, we don't need to actually lock them up.
Friday at 3 p.m. Yeah, Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have been judged to have to be house arrest the entire time. And then Friday at 8 p.m., William Jefferson Clinton was found hanging from a chandelier.
And then it's just going to like escalate. Then we're going to start going further and back, revising history. We're going to go after W next. I mean, that guy's not going to get thrown in jail because you'll never be able to prove he had a clue about anything that went on when he was president.
No. Nope,
seriously, that dude's got an Ivy League education. Like, I'm not convinced that he on his own merits could graduate from Mott.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that vice president is driving me crazy. I couldn't remember his name. Not Rumsfeld.
Cheney,
yeah. If anybody should be in jail, that guy should be in jail.
The point is, basically, we hate like 99% of all politicians that ever walk the
earth. Well, you touched on it. They're old. We need to stop putting old people in the White House, Republican or Democrat. Because if you listen to the people who say, well, your candidate, he can't walk up a flight of stairs. Yeah, well, your candidate, all he wants to do is golf. Well, your candidate looks like he's already sleeping. Well, yours is completely racist. Yes, they're all in their 70s.
Yeah,
that's what Pop does.
Why is anyone surprised like this? But the other problem is, and it's a big part of the reason why we don't really get into politics on this show, other than that always seems to start fights. Mm-hmm. I swear, at one point, there was a time where you could actually make fun of a politician doing something stupid and not have half the whole country hate you for it. I mean, you remember back in the 90s, every talk show on the planet had a field day with Clinton.
Oh, sure.
Then they went and all had a field day with W.
Yep.
And it wasn't a huge problem. It wasn't a symptom that, you know, there was something wrong with the country. Well, now.
They still do, but now they're like Saturday Night Live is famous. Name a president they haven't made fun of. You can't. They made fun of, well, maybe not Obama, because he was just kind of boring. I mean, let's face facts.
Right, there's a problem.
They did, but Trump just makes it way too easy. And so people make fun of him, and all of a sudden his cult followers are, I'm not talking about like the casual person who supports Trump would vote for him. I'm talking about the cult followers.
The guys who have their entire political philosophy spelled out in the flags they run from the back of their truck.
Yeah, they make that. They make supporting Trump their entire personality.
Oh, we'll touch on that in a minute.
Yeah. It's those people that all of a sudden, oh, liberal media, Saturday Night Live hasn't been funny since Belushi died, or blah, 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 you know. I'm just worried about what a lot of these nuts are going to do, because we have seen the violence, the attempted murder from some of these people.
My point is, though, like, I should be able to come on here and make fun of, like, the fact that how is a guy who claims to be as rich as Donald Trump should be able to afford better hair than that, or that, you know, Joe Biden's basically the patron saint of walking into a room and immediately forgetting why you entered that room. I shouldn't have a mob of pitchforks and torches outside of the studio for that.
Yeah, you are correct. I mean, they battled that during People versus Larry Flynt, not the movie, the actual court case.
Right.
That you can talk about people in satire.
But there's a couple problems inherent here that I've found. And you touched on one of them.
Sure.
Problem is, it seems like in the last, like, decade or so, like, we've kind of rendered reality kind of immune to satire at all. Like, it doesn't matter how implausible of a situation you can think of in your head. Like, we can't be entirely certain that it's not a thing that could actually happen.
Right.
You know, a convicted felon gets elected president? Yeah, not surprised. World War III? Yeah, I kind of saw that coming.
Yep.
Like, you can literally tell me at this point that aliens landed on Earth and the only way to stop them from obliterating this planet would be to assemble our finest athletes and cartoon characters in a game of pickup basketball. And I would have to honestly stop and consider, wait, well, you know, that might actually happen.
Yeah. All right, LeBron, you're in. Ovechkin, you're in. Brady, you're out of retirement, pal.
But you're right, though. It doesn't help. Like, there are so many people, and this is something we kind of touched on earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. That people have made celebrities like their entire identity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you brought up that study where a study has come out that says that people who
with a lower IQ,
basically less brain activity out of people who obsess over celebrities. And I mean, that tracks. We've said so many times on the show, people who've made Taylor Swift or Beyonce or, you know, K-pop bands, their entire personality, there's something wrong with them in the head.
Yep.
And that goes even double when you're talking someone who's a politician. Like, we've always had people who have been like, oh, yeah, athletes and movie stars and obsessed over these things. But doing that with politicians is a relatively new thing, and it quite frankly weirds me out even more.
Yeah.
I mean, and these people do make this stuff their entire personality. I'd gotten a friend request once from somebody on Facebook where you go to their little bio section. The first thing is, I hate liberals. Like, that's like the most interesting thing about your personality.
Yeah.
Like, that's the sole, like, defining characteristic of you as a human.
Yeah, you actually see him, like, looking at his computer screen with his his fingers pointed up to his mouth and just rocking back and forth going, what do I want people to know about me?
Right.
Let's do some soul searching on me and really give people the good resume that is, you know, my insert name here. And then he's like, I hate liberals.
Yeah,
liberals that's misspelled.
Right, like that's your defining characteristic. Like for me, I mean, I think the fact that somehow I've convinced an actual radio company to give actual money to me to spew this word vomit into a microphone on
until
a daily basis
now
is more interesting about me than my political leanings. In fact, it might be the only interesting thing about me.
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like everyone just needs to kind of back off. Like,
they need to stop taking this stuff so seriously.
I mean, there's a time to be taking things seriously, but there's a time to, like, not let this stuff just keep you awake all night, every night. Like, we should be able to come back here and find fun in, you know, possibly having the first, or at least be able to make jokes about the next inaugural address coming to you from a jail cell or something, or the next inaugural address being a guy going up on stage and completely forgetting the words that he was going to say.
My fellow Americans, line and live from New York. Yeah.
Like, it used to be that simple, man. Like, it's not anymore, and it's unfortunate, because it seems like you can't even make a stupid joke without someone jumping down your throat about it in that sense, when it comes to...
They try to cancel you. They want to cancel you.
I mean...
Unfollow. Unfunny.
I mean, I ain't worried about cancellation. I mean, we've been canceled multiple times over the years.
Yeah. Hi, FOV.
Right? How many times did we get fired for our first radio gig?
Twice in one day.
It's pretty impressive, actually. But we're not going to, that's not the kind of show you've come to expect from us. We're not going to come here and scream and rage about, oh my God, this is such a terrible day for this country, or oh my God, like it's a great day to be an American. Just like, you don't come to that, to this program for any of that.
No.
You come to this show because we make fun of everyone and everything, including most days each other,
yep,
the people we work for, and basically everybody around us. And that, quite frankly, is what you're going to get with maybe, you know, a side dose of me screaming about the Tigers.
There.
And there will be plenty of time for me to scream about the Tigers today. Oh, let me tell you. Actually, it's not going to be quite that bad. Like, I am kind of in a, I'm not going to say a hopeful position, but I can at least present to you today a path of sorts which might lead you to feeling that way, or at least a how this team can get old cynical me back on board.
Yeah.
We'll discuss that. We've got some unsolicited advice to get to, and an issue of our time that I promise you has absolutely, positively nothing to do with politics. We'll do all that fun stuff coming up. Stick around. It is Happy Hour, back after this. So I promise we talk a little bit of Tigers today. Of course, they won last night against the Red Sox in very convincing fashion and
Yay.
Have a good chance to at least split this series. And if they win tonight, they'll be above 500 for the first time in a decade. And like I said earlier, I come at you today not to completely rain on your parade, not to put you in a place of just total despair. I come to offer you hope. I come to offer you a real...
You're preaching to the masses here.
I feel like I'm here today to offer you salvation of sorts for Scott Harris. I am here today to lay out what this team can do to make even this cynical so-and-so here a, at least, if not believer in this team, at least get me to keep watching for the rest of the summer. And this shouldn't be a completely insurmountable task. So the All-Star break is coming up mid-July, of course. All-Star game is the 16th. Your last game before the break is the 14th. Trade deadline is approximately 2 weeks after that on the 30th of July. And I don't think this is a whole lot to ask considering you're a team that is currently sitting at 500 with the chance to be above 500 to start the month of June. What I'm asking is, if you expect me to care about this team from basically the All-Star break until the Lions begin their preseason activities, I'll tell you what I need. I need five games above 500 by the time you hit the All-Star break. Shouldn't be an entirely impossible thing to pull off.
Well, who they got coming up in that span?
So in that stretch you have Texas, Milwaukee, the Nationals, the Stros, who are not doing well this year, the Braves, the White Sox, a four-game set against the Angels, the Phillies, another three-game set against the Twins. You have a lot of divisional competition. You're also going to have to take on the whatever they're calling the team in Cleveland this week, the Reds, and then closing out going into the All-Star break against the Dodgers. And shouldn't be an entirely insurmountable task to go close to or above 500 during that stretch. I mean, it's going to be hard to do considering the state of your offense, but you have good enough pitching that I would like to see at least being discussed, even though I know ultimately no matter what happens, this team is not going to be buyers at the deadline. But I would like to at least see talk of maybe, I don't know, adding a cleanup hitter. Maybe signing Jack Flaherty to an extension instead of talking about where he's going to be traded to. Really kind of a cessation of talk of Tarek Skubal being traded. Things like that. And if that is too much to ask, then, well, quite frankly, my attention for the rest of this summer is also, in turn, too much to ask. Ooh. Is that fair? Am I setting too lofty of a goal here? Am I not being fair to the Tigers by expecting that based on where you're currently sitting in the standings? Well, like, I need you to be like within striking distance of the division, or like in a wild card spot, or like within a couple games out of.
Well, I mean, with those teams that you listed coming up, with the exception of White Sox and Phillies, not even Phillies, because the Phillies.
Phillies are good. Atlanta's good. Washington is not particularly great. They're in a similar spot to you, actually. Milwaukee's pretty decent, but Cincy is bottom of the barrel. Chicago is bottom of the barrel. The Angels are underneath the barrel. So, I mean, there's some matchups that could favor you, and honestly, you have to...
It could work out.
You have to beat up on the Twins.
All right, well, so, I mean...
you have to at least split those like six or seven games with the Twins.
So, they shut out the Red Sox last game, and they haven't played bad. You admittedly say that they haven't played bad. Is it just the pitching that's saving them, or what else? What other things are attributing?
I mean, it always helps when your team pitches a shutout.
Well, yeah.
I mean that's what you had. You had 5-0 last night against a team that is currently in third place in the AL East, one usually the most competitive division in baseball, where currently every team is at least within about five games of a wild card spot. I mean, the pitching helps. But I've harped on this for so long, man. Like, I've never seen a team win a game by scoring zero runs. It's never happened in the history of the game that I'm aware of, anyway.
No.
So there has to be a little bit of offense. You've seen some guys really kind of come alive in the month of March. Or month of March, geez.
How you doing?
The month of May.
They both start with M. I get you.
And you'd like to see that continue. To some degree, you'd like to see the guys who you've kind of brought up continue to hold on to their roles. You know, guys like Ibanez and Winsel Perez and even Verling, who has been among the best hitters on this team in recent weeks. Like, you'd like to see those guys keep rolling the way they are. It'll be interesting to see, with Akil Baddoo being up here for the time being, with Kerry Carpenter out, how he's going to, if he's going to be able to have something close to the success that he had when he first came up here. And at some point, the young guys are going to have to get it together. Maybe with some confidence in the lineup around him, you might even see Riley Green start to raise that batting average a little bit. Maybe Torque, I don't know. Colt Keith even, certainly. Baez is obviously a lost cause, and your catcher position, I wrote that off like two seasons ago. But if you can at least get some semblance of timely hitting, this shouldn't be an insurmountable goal to get to, you know, five games above 500 and maintain that up to the All-Star break. And I mean, I'm obviously willing to allow for a little bit of margin for error here. Like, if you're, I will allow an exception if you're in a wild card spot. Like, if you were at the point where you own one of those two spots, then okay, fine, whatever. Or if you're like a game and a half or two out, okay, I can be fine with that. But I do need to see. I mean, Cleveland currently is sitting, 18 games above 500. I feel like asking for five is, even Minnesota, the next team ahead of you, is currently six games above 500. I don't feel like I'm asking a lot. It shouldn't be a lot if this team is who they say they are. And like, and you're already fighting an uphill battle, admittedly, with me, because after Scott Harris goes on MLB Network last week and all it says, like, yeah, I wouldn't expect anything major for like the next couple seasons, multiple winters of signings. I know, obviously, it's going to be a lot harder to sell people. It's certainly a lot harder to sell me that this team is worth watching this year. And that's just kind of where I'm at. Like, I'm at the point where, you know, I know a lot of people further south of us don't even have the games on TV right now. And
they got to get that fixed.
they do, but also there's an increasing segment of the fan base right now that doesn't care because they don't feel like the product's worth watching. Like, you got to give us, especially when you come out and beg us to continue to be patient when it's already been basically a decade with the wilderness. It's the same thing we talked about with the Red Wings. Like, we spent like a decade in the wilderness at this point, and you're telling us, no, it's going to be a couple more years, it's going to be five more years. Like, how long? Like, I feel like we've been roaming the desert for 40 days and 40 nights or whatever, and it's just getting It's getting a little.
It's getting biblical over here.
It's getting a long time without a drink of water, man. That's what I'm. That's all I'm saying.
Something happened in the last 36 hours. I don't know what it could be.
Like it just you're leading us down a path where it doesn't seem like there's a lot of hope and a lot of here's a plan that on how to get out of this. And give credit where credit's due for assembling the pitching rotation and even the bullpen that they have. Like, if I'm going to body bag Scott Harris on this show for not having cobbled together even a competent AAA offense, I have to give him credit when him and really Chris Fetter have put together one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. I have to at least be fair about it. But if you expect me to devote more of my time and attention this summer to this ball club beyond basically the 4th of July, I need to see something tangible from you. I need to see that someone somewhere in this thing is trying, that someone is making an attempt, and that there is really some semblance of progress being made. We got to hit a break, though. Stick around. It is happy hour. It's Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, and it's about that time of the show where I stop judging the Tigers and judge people who write letters to advice columnists. It's once again time for Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice, where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and I think we give better advice than the people who get paid to do this crap for a living.
All right.
So let's dive right in, shall we? Dear somebody who cares, my first wife, Trish, and I divorced about 5 years ago. She didn't want to have sex after the birth of our kids, so I found it elsewhere. I was very discreet, but she found out after several years. Then she informed me what's good for the gander is good for the goose and started seeing other people too. That was fine with me as it gave me more freedom and less paranoia about getting caught cheating. She asked for a divorce within the year, and since my girlfriend of 2 years, Annie, had been pressuring me to leave Trish, I thought it was the best outcome for everyone. Annie and I got married soon after the divorce was final. I see Trish every week when we hand off the kids, who are now teenagers, and I dread it. Not because she's mean or rude. She's warm and generous and funny, in fact. I recognize that she hasn't really changed. These traits were always there, but they're buried under my resentment over the intimacy thing, the nagging, the financial stress, etc. On top of that, her career took off almost as soon as we separated, but not soon enough for me to ask for alimony. She's earning more by herself than our combined household income when we were together. Her live-in boyfriend, she has told the kids she'll never marry again, which feels like an attack on me, her one and only experience with marriage, is a well-known writer, and together they travel to exotic places, eat at fancy restaurants, and have a crowd of well-known writer friends. They're even taking the kids to London this summer while he teaches a workshop there. I'm struggling financially and having some health issues. The recent loss of a visible tooth I can't afford to replace hit even harder than the diabetes diagnosis. And my now wife Annie has health issues of her own that make her tired and irritable and affect her ability to work. I used to be mostly content with my life, even when married to Trish, as long as she wasn't nagging me. Her new life makes me feel terrible, like the spotty overweight kid at a high school dance. I feel like in the game of divorce, I lost big and it's eating me up. I'm resentful that we had money problems when we were together because she didn't work very hard. She said she was focused on the kids in the home. I hate that my daughter showed me a picture of her mom beaming happiness with her boyfriend on a mountaintop in Patagonia. I hate the idea of therapy and can't afford it anyway. And the antidepressants my doctor prescribed don't seem to be doing anything. Can you help me reframe this so I can get over it? How do I live in the life I have now, maybe even improve it, instead of going around and around about all the ways it could have gone differently for me?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, you guys divorcing was probably the right thing to do. I mean, at that time. Do you regret it? Do you want her back? No, you want what she has, not her. You don't want her. You want what she has. You want her financial stability. You want to be able to travel. But that's just not what's going on. I mean, she has what you're seeing is, and this goes for anybody. When you're seeing things on Facebook or Instagram or anything, you're seeing people's highlight reel. You're not seeing the everything else. I mean, if you were okay, let's say hypothetically, your wife leaves you, her boyfriend leaves her, and you guys start dating again and maybe even get married.
The same issues would probably come up.
Or worse than. So it's not the idea of being together. First of all, get that out of your head. You just need to stop worrying about what she has and start worrying about yourself. You make yourself feel better about you. Get your teeth fixed. Get yourself into a situation. Take care of your diabetes. If you're not happy with your profession, change it. Don't compare yourself to her because you two, your lives separated and hers went on a different route. I'm not going to even say better, but a different route.
I'd say better.
Well, yeah. I mean, at face value, sure. Don't get upset with her because she succeeded and in your opinion. No, hang on a second. Hang on a second. You're going to get your chance to talk. Your Honor. He's trying to lead the witness.
Objection.
There's nothing you can do about your ex-wife. You can only change you. So take care of yourself. Take care of your teeth. Take care of your diabetes. You worry about you, King.
I'm not sure King is the operable term here, man.
No, that's what guys are calling each other these days.
I mean, bolster them up. I know it's a thing, but this guy sounds like kind of a schmuck.
Well, what do you think, King?
I'll take it. What do I think? I think he's a schmuck. He's a schmuck, and I immediately see just in this letter why you're, other than the cheating thing, I see why your wife left you. Because you just have nothing but jealousy issues just all over. Like,
oh, yeah.
I can't stand to see someone else be successful. And why couldn't she have been this successful when she was with me? I mean, he even talks about, like, not even being happy that, hey, you did this thing. I'm mad I'm not getting any alimony from you for not having done anything. Like, I'm not happy for you that you went to pursue your dream that you probably never would have let her do.
Yeah, that's like, a good point.
You probably would have complained all the time about that. Well, who's going to take care of the kids? And now you're just mad that you're not getting a cut of something that you had no part of. You sound like a load to be around, dude. And I don't know what combination of antidepressants they got you on, but you clearly need to refigure that because you're going to screw up your marriage with your current wife by continuing to compare her and your situation to your old wife.
I mean, you're right. You're on the money.
I am.
I am going to just take issue with the one point where he says, I could have gotten alimony, but whatever. I think that's a passing kind of thing in that letter. I don't think that's really, oh man, I should have stuck around. I could have taken her for every dime. I don't think that's really it. I think he wanted to be more financially stable with her. He wanted to go on those vacations to London with her and have the kids, you know, show pictures. I don't know. Whatever.
Well, I imagine that never. See, the problem is you're assuming that any of these things could have in any theoretical universe been the case with the two of you. And I just don't think that's so because you sound like a not particularly supportive husband, whereas this guy sounds like he is. He's in a better financial situation seemingly than you are. So this whole life that she's built with this other guy never would have been a possibility with you because this guy actually has, you know, ambition.
Ambition and probably held her up where you probably were like, you know, we got kids. Well, what are you doing? No, you don't be doing that. That's stupid.
Right.
And then you wonder why she didn't want to sleep with you.
Right, you basically made it miserable to be around you, and you're wondering why this other guy who's actually supportive, like, why are they having such a good life together? Maybe look in the mirror, dude.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about her. There's nothing you can do about her life with her boyfriend. The only thing you can control is you. You need to better yourself and make yourself feel better, King.
Okay. You're just really hung up on this King thing, aren't you?
Today. Next week will be something completely different.
It'll be back to squad goals again.
Squad goals, yes. Hashtag squad goals.
So honestly, I mean, worry about your current relationship because I can already see that you are making the same mistakes with this one than you did with the last one. Like, you're already kind of... Like, you're being critical of, like, her for, how dare you have health issues? How dare you not be able to go out and make me a living? Like, you are...
Exactly.
Like, I find it kind of weird, man, that, like, you're already just coming down on her on this one for things that are also not in her control. So, like, I feel like you're going to find yourself in divorce number two in fairly short order if you keep this up.
Oh, in fact, as we continue reading, as I'm writing this letter, my wife has left me, and now apparently she has a patent for a brand new item, and she's a millionaire. What, is it me?
Right.
Yes, it is you.
It is absolutely you. I'm sorry, but it's total. She's going to be a New York Times best-selling offer, you're not getting a dime of alimony off that.
It's really weird. It's like last week, I just got tired of the dog, so I took the dog to the pound, and that dog got picked up for a dog food commercial, and that dog is making more money than me. I saw pictures of the dog in London. What should I do?
I feel like that's where we're going here, man.
Yeah, right.
That's absolutely going to be what happens here. Oh, I think we've torn this poor guy up enough. Shall we do another one of these?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Okay. Dear literally anybody other than Sean and Adam, please, for the love of God.
Too bad.
I went no contact with my dad about a decade ago for a lot of reasons, but mostly that I couldn't handle his flagrant narcissism or his taking his mood swings out of my voicemail. It's been great not ending a phone call a day in tears. Now, however, my brother is getting married, and I know we'll be seated at the same table at the reception.
Oh, boy.
There's a chance that 10 years, having a baby granddaughter, and getting to see his son married will have him in a good mood, but that might swing over into maudlin. Princess, why did you abandon me? Etc. I have no idea how to navigate a dinner with him. Do I just ignore him? Treat him like an old acquaintance? What do I even say? I told my brother, don't start no bleep, won't be no bleep, as I am perfectly capable of being polite. I just don't know how to act when I see him again or what to say. Thank God it's an open bar. And I think you just answered your own question right there.
Or you just sealed your own fate, because if it's open bar, daddy is going to be at the open bar. And yeah, it's going to, the cake cutting ceremony, he's going to be fine. But, you know, first dance, you know, he's fine. But by the time they start playing the cha-cha slide, he's going to have a couple rum and cokes in him. And he'll be like, why don't you call your daddy anymore? Is it because I'm a complete jerk? Is it because I'm a complete jerk? I mean, ultimately, you're just going to have play nice for your brother. Is it the brother that's getting married?
Yes.
Yeah, play nice for your brother. If the dad brings it up, be receptive. Say, you know what, Dad, I want to talk to you about this, but now's not the time. Let's set a time. We'll get down. We'll talk about it, and we will hash this out, okay? Let's go to the open bar. And then he'll want to talk about it some more. He's like, we'll talk about it later on. This is not the time to hash out family. This is a happy occasion. You want to see your kid, your grandkid. You want to see your son get married and start a new thing in life. Let's go to the open bar. And then later on, just push it on. Any kind of bad blood, at a wedding and Christmas, you should just be able to take the bad blood and postpone it. You should be able to.
Well, that should, but you know that never happens in reality.
No.
It doesn't. Like,
No. He's going to try to do his thing, and she's just going to have to deflect. Wonder Woman. Bracelets. Pew, pew. I'm not talking about this right now. But I want to. I'm not talking about this right now. If you want to talk about it, we definitely can, but not today. I had a situation with my brother at his wedding. My sister... half-sister from my dad's previous relationship, wanted to really have this conversation with my mom, who was not her mom, and just really have this out. She had it in her head. She was going to have this out with my mom. And I, as the best man, it was my duty to be like, we're not doing this. My mom has sunk too much money into this wedding. This is not the time. I will give you, and because my mom, they were about ready to square off. And I'm like, I will give you phone numbers. I will give you email addresses. You guys do that on a different time. Today is not the day. My brother-in-law, he's like, well, you know, they really need to have this conversation. Not today, they don't. And at this point, I mean, my brother-in-law is 6'4". And by the time, I was best man. That was my prerogative. It's my prerogative. I point, I was like, this is not the time. And he understood, because he's a rational man. And my sister, rest her soul, she was a rational woman. My mom, she was a rational person. So everybody just kind of backed off. But you just don't do it then.
Yeah. There's no reason to have these issues out on that day. Like,
yeah.
It's supposed to be a happy, drama-free day. I know ours certainly was. And I'm actually impressed with you, sir. I feel like you've grown as a radio personality. You actually gave an entirely, like, fully, like, good, coherent piece of advice that I can't find any fault with or disagree on. I never thought I'd say that. And yet, here we are.
Oh, I'm sure.
And we're just going to end this before you even try and take this thing sideways.
I'm sure there's been a couple times in the past I've done that. But yeah, this I've actually had some footing in this kind of this thing. So I can say from experience.
I would also I would be opposed to going before, because there's no way that your sibling doesn't know that you have this issue. Maybe ask him, put you at a different table. Like, you know, not the day of the wedding, obviously, but like sometime leading up to, could we just seat me somewhere else, just to, you know, to kind of to avoid this anything, you know, before it starts.
First of all, if you have assigned seats, just knock it off. I mean, assigned seats are just not, I mean, it makes things too claustrophobic for people. Am I supposed to sit here or what it was? You know, but I mean, if you do have assigned seats, I would say to the writer, just lean into it. Just go ahead and sit there and don't, I mean, because everybody's
going to
be, everybody else, all the other 200 guests are going to be like, oh, you see the sisters over here and the father's over there. What's going on there? And it's going to be a bunch of whispering. Take away that thing. Just suck it up for an evening for your brother.
I mean, if this guy is as terrible as the writer makes it sound, there that might only be an option to a certain extent. I mean, also, I agree with you on the assignment seating thing. That like that should never.
That's so stupid.
There's no reason for that to be a thing. Like, I know we didn't have any assigned seating in our wedding. Like, here, the actual wedding party is sitting up front. I don't care what the rest of y'all do. Y'all can hang at the bar for all I care.
I mean, I get it where you want, like, the important people up front. You have the wedding table, so you have, like, one assigned table. Other than that, it's all...
It's free-for-all.
Because, I mean, what if I want to sit with, like at your wedding, what if there's somebody I want to sit with?
Right.
You know, way over there. Or, and you got to think about, okay, so, like, tables 1, 2, 3, those guys are great. What about table 27? How do they feel? We're like, oh my God, I'm so mad that I went to the registry and I got one of the most expensive things on their gifts, and I'm way back here in the nosebleeds.
Right. All it really does, it seems like, is potentially cause hurt feelings. Like, there's just no reason to even do it.
No, you've never seen anybody walk away from a wedding reception with assigned seats like, wow, that worked out well. Now, everybody was so happy.
Nor have you gone to a wedding where it was a science scene where everyone finished the night at the same table at which they started.
No way. How many times have you been to a wedding where the groomsmen are like, I left my vest somewhere around here?
Right. Just go.
Is that my jacket?
Post up somewhere else, or have, you know, if you got a cousin who's willing to do you a solid, have to do the old switcheroo for you.
Like, that's right.
There's ways around this. And failing all that, just spend a bunch of time at the open bar.
A bunch of time at the open bar. And don't forget to tip.
Absolutely. That's the most important thing. No matter what you do on the day of your brother's wedding, make sure you tip your bartender.
Absolutely.
Hope that helped. We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. So this is something I kind of have to really pose to you here. Kind of an issue of our time sort of thing.
Lay it on me.
And don't worry, we're not getting political again, I promise. This is something actually that you were going to have to sort of take the reins on, because I apparently am not old enough to enter this bar.
Okay, so you put the cereal in, then the milk. I'm sorry, that's where we go. Breakfast cereal, then the milk.
Well, it's always cereal first. That goes without saying.
Well, there's some people out there.
But anyway, those people are weird.
Please continue.
But there's a restaurateur in St. Louis that has quite the age restriction. A new upscale restaurant in Florissant, Missouri that is called Bliss, that women must be at least 30 to enter. Men must be at least 35.
So now, I mean, there's like the ACLU who is probably going to chime in, but I mean, I think that's great. I think that's fantastic.
Now, here's the funny thing. The guy who opened the bar is
20.
That would be hilarious. No, he's turned 36. Marvin Pate and his wife opened Bliss just 2 weeks ago. quote, it represents pure happiness and pure utopia. It's a home away from home. You can come here and feel like you're actually on a resort. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
No, I get it. Because, I mean, a lot of times you go to those resorts or cruises, and you find yourself with like-minded people, liked age people.
Sure.
I get it. That has to be really tough to police, right?
Well, I mean, so, they're IDing people at the door.
I know, but, I mean, now this bouncer is like, oh, my God, I didn't think I'd get myself into this. No, ma'am, I'm sorry. You're 34 years old. I know you got, like, three kids and a couple grandkids on the way. I can't let you in.
No, she'd be allowed in because it's women. Would you like that, by the way? The so age women limit for 30, women is 30.
Oh,
for men, it's 35.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. So men, 35. Women, 30. You know what?
See, prove that even the kind of people who like need to be away from like younger men or whatever, those kind of guys who still want younger women.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hate to tell y'all, but in this day and age, there's really no difference between a 32-year-old and a 25-year-old. There really is not. There's no difference between a 36-year-old man and a 26-year-old man. There, I mean, maybe in their area there is, but I mean, I don't think that's going to get the desired response that he wants.
No, I imagine not. Well, it's getting him.
What's going to?
It's getting him publicity, so it probably is getting him the exact response he wants.
Yeah, but it's also cutting into his bottom line. Oh, hey, I'd like to take you out on a first date. Let's go to Cougars. Cougars is over here. No, I'm only 27, so I can't go. Oh man, oh that sucks. Well, I'm going to go to the Cougars. I'll talk to you later. it's something like that where it's just like they only the oldest song they play is like Sum 41.
Well, they're playing that classic rock again.
Oh, look at that. Oh, my God. Is that My Chemical Romance? Oh, classic rock. Yeah, baby.
I mean, there's some places where there's not necessarily an age, that you age out of to get into, but like it might as well be. Like there was a bar I went to not long ago in downtown Detroit. I won't, throw them under the bus on the air, but
I should.
But it was such like a college bar and not like but in the best way. Like there are good like college bar kind of places, but this was the one where like I walked in and like it's kind of club and music, and it's very much like preppy college dudes, yeah. And like I feel too old to be in this place, yes. And I'm not that old.
Yeah, and people start to look at you like, who is the old guy? Who is he with? So there is that. There's that way where people are looking at you as being too old for a place. This place is kind of going a different route, and I get it because, I mean, I think that. He and his wife, they're teaming up for this this establishment. They're thinking...
And she's probably 5 years younger than him, which is why he put that rule in place.
And he's...
How convenient. Look at that.
Hey, that... Hey.
She just turned 30. All right, that's the rule.
Okay, that's the rule. But I get it to where they probably thinking, you're going to get less fights. You're going to get... more stimulating conversation. You're going to get people, of like-minded thoughts and ideas and everything. And it all looks good on paper, but you'll realize that being a jerk is not age-restricted.
It certainly isn't. Like, you think you're going to get less fights. Let me tell you, the last several fights I've had to break up or intervene on at bars have been guys who quite frankly are old enough to know better. Dudes who are older than me, like people who should like people in their 30s, 40s. Like I had to split up two like 50 something year old dudes who didn't even drink. They were sucking on pop all night.
So the caffeine like, got them and like we're fighting.
Yeah. Like you should know better than to do this. Like it seems like every time anymore like trust me, the getting dumb and drunk and getting in fights is not by any means just a young man's game, sadly.
Yeah. I mean...
The conversations aren't always any more stimulating either,
so,
to be
I mean,
quite frank.
In this article, I'm sorry if I cut you off, is if there is any more... Is there a reason why they're going for this age restriction? A very unique age restriction.
No, he just says, quote, it's just something for the, well, I guess his manager says, it's just something for the older people to come do and have a happy hour, come get good food, and not have to worry about some of the young folks that bring some of that drama.
Okay. I mean, and they might get that desired response, but like the aforementioned issues, it doesn't matter the age. It kind of matters in how much you handle your alcohol, quite frankly. Because I've been around 22, 23-year-olds who are copacetic. Everything's fine. But then I've been with somebody who was 50, 55 years old. They have like a couple whiskeys, and they're ready to punch windshields.
We've all seen it happen. We've all gotten involved in those fights at one point or another, whether it's to join in or break them up.
Yeah.
Like there's always
I see this age restriction going away really quickly because what's going to happen is you're going to have a 35-year-old guy who's trying to get it on with a 27-year-old and it's not going to go there. And you're going to see a lot of people avoid the place because of the restrictions, and that person, that duo, is going to lose money.
I don't think necessarily that they're going to, I mean, they'll probably lose some money. He does say he's not worried about pushback. Of course, we've been getting a little backlash, but that's okay because we're sticking to our code. Everyone who enters a place has to show their ID to a hostess or a St. Louis County cop after 7 Wednesday through Sunday. But the only way I really see that changing, I don't see the men's age restriction changing at all. I do eventually, however, see the women's potentially getting lowered. Because you know the older guys, like there's going to be a DiCaprio or two in that bunch. Like the second you turn 25, I'm done with
you. A DiCaprio mention. Absolutely, because we all know what we're talking about. Yes, so put him on the apology list.
Probably should.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know that someone's going to be like that. Like, well, I want to have a younger woman in the bar.
And, you know,
but they don't. They're still going to keep the men's the same because they don't want to fight the young bucks for those women.
The early days of St. Pauli Street, when we were really hopping, there was one place in Lapeer where, guys, 21 and over, with cover, women, 18 and over, no cover. And they got away with it.
Oh, they absolutely have. I mean, a lot of places.
It's a private establishment. They can levy any kind of cover on anybody they want.
Also, to the same point, though, why are they bothering to let the under 21-year-old women in, like, you're not
because
you're
that, to, gets, the that guys gets the guys in to pay it, the cover who, you know.
Well, it gets them to pay the cover, but it also doesn't, I mean, it's not like they can buy the girls drinks because
no, but it gets a chance to meet them, or at least gets a facade they can meet them, and then they go
fair.
There and, you know, yeah.
I suppose that makes sense, but yeah, places do this all the time. Like, they're trying to,
I mean,
because we know it's like a majority.
We were the band, we got a chance to meet 18-year-old girls.
I bet couldn't. You did. I bet you did, Adam. But
all I'm going to say is sisters. Sisters.
Okay. Duly noted, Adam.
Yes, yes.
But, yeah, I don't see. I get that places want to do that because they want to get a more upscale clientele of men that will spend money in their establishment.
Right.
Like, because that, like, it's easy to get. Ultimately, all you have to do is get the women in the bar and the guys will follow.
Yes. That why is there ladies' night everywhere?
Because
you get the ladies, and the guys are like, oh, ladies will be there. Here we go.
The hard part is, you know, sometimes just getting the women in the bar in the first place. Because once you get the women, the men part's easy. Like, oh, my God, there are actually women there hanging out.
Getting guys into a bar, that's
getting guys into a bar
part.
Is the easiest thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
But to get them really just opening up the pocketbooks and spending money,
getting women in there to where they feel safe.
Yeah, that's the other part of it.
That's a big thing. But this thing, I mean, kudos to what they're trying to achieve, because they're trying to come up with a bar idea where they just have more of a low-key kind of night atmosphere. You're looking at it the wrong way. Don't think demographic, think psychographic. So you want to have, like if I opened up a club, I would have, like, soft music, piano player, tablecloths, something like that. So the woo girls and the guys with shirts that advertise energy drinks, they're not going to go there. You want to have that kind of situation where people can have a conversation. Maybe dinner's a little overpriced because you want the right clientele. as opposed to, okay, well, we're checking IDs. Oh, you're 29? Sorry, sweetheart, you're not coming in. Oh, hey, dude, you're 34? You're not coming in.
And it I'm sure it'll work to some extent to get rid of that younger, undesirable demographic. I mean, also, to be fair, I, as someone who has spent a lot of time bartending at places, I don't mind the idea of maybe, like, of having some sort of, you know, above 21 restriction, the idea of having that restriction for, like, the young, because the younger generation, and here I go being
here
get off my
go.
Lawn guy.
Oh, okay. But clueless, clue us all in.
Like, there's about a quarter or so, quarter to maybe a third of the, like, just turned 21 to 22, 23-year-olds who get it.
Yes.
Who know how to act in a bar.
Yes.
Who know how to get service in a bar. Who know how to tip in a bar.
Yes.
And then there's that other two-thirds or three-quarters that don't.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of them just don't believe in tipping at all anymore. And when you work at a dive bar where it's basically all about pumping out volume and kids just wanting to get lit, that's not making you a whole lot of money.
No. No.
Like, they don't seem to, like... There's enough of them that don't know how to act, and a lot of them that just don't know how to, like, they don't know the basics of how to behave and tip at a bar.
May I take my old man stance for just a moment?
Sure.
It's because of COVID. Everything shut down, so the 22-year-old was locked in at 18 years old during a formative year of their life, and they weren't raised right. They really weren't. So that's what we have.
They didn't learn social skills during that time.
They don't. And there's a lot of older people who were, like, quarantined for a while there that lost their social skills, myself included. I'll explain. The first time I was in a restaurant after COVID was at one of my favorite restaurants, Blind Fish over in Lapeer. I'll give them a free shout out. I was sitting there, and I let out the biggest belch because everybody kind of looked at me like, oh, sorry, I forgot that I'm in public, and they all laughed, and we had a good time. But I mean, that's just one idea. Is like, so these 18-year-olds during COVID, all of a sudden they're now 22, and they're like, I see the newsprint, I see the things on TikTok. This guy, Sean, who's a great bartender, he's just glad I'm here. He's just so gracious that I am here.
That's a lie.
Yeah. But it is, but, you know.
Your existence and the $0 you left me on your $25 bar tab have determined that was a lie.
There's a lot of kids out there that need to be educated on the whole thing of servers. It is what it is, but we're going to rise above it.
Are we?
No, but I got to tell myself that each and every day.
It's the only thing that keeps you going anymore.
It is.
I understand.
Joey is going to know how to tip 30% on every tab because I will teach that young man.
That's what I like to hear. You're really trying to do the Lord's work here, sir.
That's right.
Raise that next generation to know how to act at the bar.
I mean, I would teach my stepkids, but they're in their little squirrel cage, and I got to feed them carrots every once in a while, and I can't even get them into a bar.
Yeah, I feel like they're never going to get on drinking because they're just going to pound energy drinks forever.
Yeah, pretty much.
Energy drinks and Mountain Dew. Like, who needs booze when you have way too much caffeine and sugar?
Exactly.
I mean, I would disagree on this, but
well,
you know.
I mean, there are also the homeschooled kids, which I talked about. You know,
social
skills. We shut down the country. Everybody's like, "Oh, homeschooled kids? Did they raise up? Weren't they raised weird?" And then the country shut down, and we had an entire generation of homeschooled kids. And you know, that's it. That's what we got now. So heads up, America.
Yeah, I don't know that it necessarily made them the way that they are now with the no attention spans and the social skills being lacking. But it certainly, I would say, accelerated the process.
Off the air.
Because it was trending that way already, let's be honest.
It was, but, I mean, all of a sudden now it's just like Everybody's talking about safes. You know what? I'm gonna stop. I'm gonna stop because I'm going to. Nobody should be wearing a foxtail. Take me out, Sean.
My, that was ADHD theater.
It's a lot of Adam going, I want to talk about this, but I kind of want to keep a job.
Fair. We'll come back and we'll find something to close this thing out with that's not going to have your blood pressure going through the roof. Maybe. Stick around. It's happy hour. We'll be back right after this.
It's over.
Jack Daniels!
It is happy hour. It is getting close to time for us to get out of Dodge for the weekend.
Oh, we still got to talk some hockey.
Oh, we will talk all that hockey. As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey?
I don't think they'd really say it so much of a Christopher Walken kind of idea, but
let's
do that.
Hockey.
We are seeing a conference finals Walken that we haven't seen in a long time, and we have the Florida Panthers and New York Rangers. They played a pivotal game four, and Panthers won. Reinhardt with the empty netter, 3-2 is your final.
And then, I told you that series is going the distance, man.
Yeah, I know.
These are two
teams. I've already. Oh, no, excuse me. Panthers lead the series 3-2.
I mean, I don't think the Panthers are going to close it out in game six.
It's in Florida.
Oh, man. Well, maybe then. That's
it's
a tough
in Florida.
One.
It looks good. It looks bad for the blue shirts. They've got to figure it out. But if there's any team that will do it, it's going to be Laviolette. And the blue shirts.
Needs more Rempe.
Yeah, needs a little bit more Rempe for that sauce. You have tonight, puck drop, 8:30.
Can I just gloat real quick on the fact that I was right? You said Edmonton wasn't going to win another game in this series.
Yes.
And yeah, I told you there's no way.
Go ahead.
There was no way on earth that they were just going to roll over and die and let Dallas take two in a row.
Go ahead and take your victory lap.
I was right.
Yes, you did. Something about
Mr. Hockey Elite over here.
Yes, yeah. Hockey Elite. Tell me who is following that order because we're all wrong. I mean, something about this series where, okay, we're going into Game 5. Game 5 is tonight in Dallas. But for some reason, every time when a team wins, it's like the other team just curdles up. They turtle. On this, I mean,
they turtle like Claude Lemieux.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, nice 97 reference. Nicely done, sir. 96, excuse me. Like, we talk about game four, Oilers lit the Stars up in their own barn 5-2. So, but
they're not going to get embarrassed that same way twice.
No,
at home ice.
No,
not going to happen.
No.
Dallas is winning tonight. Lock that in. I think Dallas wins the next one.
I think they do. It's going to be Dallas and Florida, but I'm saying and I hope that both of these series go to Game 7. Wouldn't that be fantastic? I love Game 7s if my team's not in the race, but I mean, Rangers, Cats in Game 7, Oilers, Stars, Game 7, oh, sign me up.
Absolutely. Can't really ask for more than that. I'd like to see another game seven, maybe a double overtime again.
Oh,
we already have all those in this series.
I'm almost 50 years old. I don't want double overtime. Give me an overtime in like the first 10 minutes, and then I can like you know.
No excuses. The conference finals. Suck it up.
No. Stanley Cup finals. I'm up all night. Me and the Roosters are going to be celebrating the Stanley Cup, but. Conference finals? Nah, come on. I can do better.
Well, celebrating is probably a not the right term, considering that our team's not in it.
Well, you know what I'm saying. I'm rooting for the blue shirts. It's going to be Florida, but I'm an original six guy. New York Rangers all the way. Oh, the music. Oh.
Yeah, it's already that time of the week. And our
Is
weekly
really?
Attempt to cleanse our souls. Yeah, we're
we
kind of ran a bit. We got a bit rambly earlier, so we got to kind of cram this in.
All right.
Happy Hour would like to apologize to soccer fans, the Irish, Gary Thorne, Bill Clement, Peter Forsberg, Jesus, the Charlotte Hornets, Leonardo DiCaprio, Cougarville, Adam Stepkids, Christopher Walken, and everyone at St. Light Broadcasting. We're sorry. On that note,
nicely done.
We got to get out of here because, well, I got a gig to play tonight in downtown Lapeer for our first
bike night
of the summer.
Lapeer.
Be a good time all the way around. Stop out. I'm told apparently they're setting us up in front of Rogers Pharmacy. Right at the corner of West Nepissing and
Sean's Street. Wearing long pants.
Which doesn't happen very often. I mean, not that they know that because this is radio. But it's a thing. We're going to be playing out there till 9 o'clock
tonight. I want the listeners to be like, hey, Sean, nice pants.
I'm sure that's not going to happen. Yeah. I'm entirely fine if that doesn't happen. So that's going on. First bike night of the summer in lovely downtown Lapeer tonight. So we're going to have us a blast doing that. Stick around. Sessions is up next with an encore presentation, one that will actually start on time this time, with Living AI.
Yeah, Living AI. They're a great band. I had them in studio, and we had technical difficulties, so they weren't able to start on time, and the good people over at
FM on WTTV haven't heard it at all.
Yes, so you're going to hear that interview in its entirety.
In its actual right proper time slot.
That's
and everything.
Right.
Because, better knock on wood on that, because I say that, and then something's going to go down. Anyway, Sessions is next. Talk to you Monday at 3. See ya.